From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
In a Gallup poll conducted last fall, 28% of Illinoisans said that our state, Illinois, is the worst state in which to live. That was the highest of any other state mentioned. 50% of Illinoisans said they'd leave Illinois if they could. That was also the highest of any other state in America. It is against this backdrop that Governor Rauner is advocating for change, and he's encountering severe resistance.
I somewhat resent the notion that this is some kind of political or ego battle going on. This is ideological. This is an ideological battle. What I hear is a young mother doesn't understand why the payment of daycare so that she can go to work is conditioned on doing right to work in the state of Illinois. And a hospital doesn't understand why they might have to shut their doors unless we eliminate collective bargaining.
Comments there. You just heard John Bradley, a Southern Illinois Democrat on the leadership team of House Speaker Michael Madigan. And prior to that, Tim Newding, Governor Rauner's budget director, as they kind of talked about budget versus turnaround agenda. They were speaking at a confab at the City Club of Chicago this past week. Our Amanda Venicky was even on that panel, so we'll just get her firsthand take on that in a little while. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel on State Week includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey with WUIS and IPR, Amanda Venicky, as I mentioned, and our guest this week, Monique Garcia of the Chicago Tribune. Monique, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And what we're going to be talking about, surprise, surprise, is a budget stalemate, budget differences, budget crisis, whatever we want to call it. But we'll start Amanda Venicky, and we heard Newding and Bradley spouting off at each other. Were they shedding light on the issue for people?
I'm not necessarily sure that any new ground was broken at this sort of event, but for those that are sort of peripherally following what's going on with the budget and wondering, how is it that the Republicans and Democrats can't come to any sort of agreement? Yeah, an event like that really puts it on display. You have Democrats saying that the focus needs to be on the budget and that Rauner's initiatives that he wants and that he's making contingent on talking about revenue will harm the economy. And on the other hand, you have the governor's own budget director, who, of course, at this point doesn't really have a budget to manage, but nonetheless needs to worry about the state moving toward a deficit because it's spending more than it's taking in, even without that, saying that he does believe that his boss is correct, that in order to get the budget on track long term, the turnaround agenda and these requests that Governor has made, he says, need to be filled. So that's Tim Newding. I should point out, I mean, he's pretty well respected. Even those that disagree with him, he's got a good reputation in the State House. He's been around the Capitol for a couple dozen years, actually dealing with appropriations for on the Republican side. And kind of he had a quote that I think is summed it all up. He said that if you view the state as sick, we don't need a dose of amoxicillin. It needs more than that. We need something to cure the disease. And that's what he, the governor, is looking for.
Well, if we're going to cure a disease, we got to at least meet with the patients. I guess we will have that meeting coming up in mid-November that the good government groups are putting together. Did either of those gentlemen that were at the podium in Chicago have anything to say about the upcoming meetings and whether that will actually help them make progress, whether it be towards a short-term spending plan or addressing these long-term conditions?
Well, I'd say that I was with the governor actually this week in Bloomington, and he was asked directly about this meeting, and he pish-poshed it. He said, you know, it's all going to be posturing. We're going to have TV cameras there at this public meeting. Nothing's going to get done. He literally used the word whatever to describe it.
Whatever. No, I mean, it's notable, I think, how much Republicans are downplaying this meeting. And as we analyze where the budget situation is, why is that? Is it because the governor will be the one that takes the fall if, after a much heralded meeting that gets a lot of media attention, nothing changes? Is it just because he's trying to, you know, tamp down expectations because everybody, in part of that, that by and large, nobody's really expecting a deal? He has put a January timeline. There are those that buy into that. There are those that think it'll be plenty thereafter. And again, we still haven't seen an agenda put forth. And from what we can gather, there's even squabbling about that, what they're going to talk about at this meeting. So you're right, Bill. In order to fix a sickness, if you believe in fact that there is one, and I think most people, at the very least now because of the gridlock, would very much agree so, even if you don't believe in the governor's turnaround agenda, that right now something is ailing the state. But that meeting between doctor and patient, if we want to try and continue this analogy, I'm not sure that it can keep on going there, but that meeting might not be the most productive if you take the governor at his word.
Now, well, let me
jump in here. With respect to the meeting, my experience has been that when you do stuff in public of this nature, you probably aren't going to get results. What you really need to do is sit down behind closed doors, have the Democratic leadership, the governor and his folks, and seriously understand that there has to be some compromise, and compromise isn't you accept my turnaround agenda and then we'll talk. And to go back to the analogy about a sickness.
Or on the other side of the coin, I guess it's you don't accept anything I offer.
Well, the governor is saying everything. And on the other side, there are some things the Democrats aren't going to accept, but there are other things that, in my mind, are significant, and which in the past they've shown themselves willing to negotiate. Workers' compensation, for example. I don't see any reason why they can't do that going forward. But to use the analogy of the patient being sick, before you decide whether it's going to be amoxicillin or some miracle drug, you have to make the diagnosis. And if the diagnosis is that you have an appendicitis, you don't take out the tonsils. And what I'm suggesting is that, at least in my mind, the governor's position that if we basically severely limit collective bargaining, if we bust the unions, everything will be peachy keen, I don't think that that's true. And even if it were, it's not going to make any impact on FY16. We're almost halfway through the fiscal year. Even if he got everything he asked for, that's not going to close the budget gap we're facing now.
But of course, we know that the reason the governor wants to use the FY16 budget to negotiate on these other points about local government collective bargaining and other things in his turnaround agenda is that, as he said publicly to the Tribune editorial board, as he said at public events before he was even a candidate for governor, this is an opportunity for leverage for him, right? Crisis creates opportunity. And right now you have human service providers throughout Illinois, people who deal with domestic violence victims and people who have substance abuse issues and people with mental health disorders are all saying that they're shutting down or turning away clients or really scaling back. They're dipping into their reserves. Some of them are going to have to shut their doors altogether soon. And, you know, the governor has said that he sees an opportunity there to push Democrats, you know, to make a choice between AFSCME and SEIU and the other government employee unions and funding these human services. So you can see from his standpoint, this is a sort of opportunity.
Right. And he's done a very, very he's tried very hard to walk a fine line in acknowledging that he wants to take advantage of a crisis and then also placing the blame on Democrats for the crises that are created. He said, I understand that change is hard. That's what we're doing now. There is going to be short-term pain. I'm real sorry about it, but I think that we have to go through these challenges now to come out better on the other side. The question is going to be is what's going to be left on the other side at this point. We keep spending due to court orders and various laws, and we're looking at a budget deficit, I think, up to $8 billion? $8 billion now is the current
$8 billion, and then you even hear people use $12 million. I mean, it just keeps on going. And so what's going to be left, or even not to belabor this point, but the sickness, they can't even agree on what the ailment is. So that's part of it. Democrats would say, so back to this, you know, panel at the City Club of Chicago, Tim Newding said, hey, we tried raising taxes. This is something we've heard the governor say as well. We tried raising taxes without change. Look what happened. The state had its credit rating downgraded, and we lost all sorts of jobs, never really successfully recovered from the recession. And Newding said, look, there's the example. That's what happened under Pat Quinn. Democrats would say, yeah, all of that happened in large part because of pensions. That was where the credit ratings came from, the downgrade, because Illinois has this monstrous debt that is weighing it down long term on pensions, not because of the tax increase. And in fact, they say, look back to a year ago, because as we tape this program, it's a year since Bruce Rauner won the election against Pat Quinn. They say, look back. Were we better off a year ago? Yeah, they say the state had a budget, and that what Rauner wants is, you know, the prescription. He's saying that the economy is ailing, and that's the big issue, and his prescription would be the turnaround agenda. And Democrats say, no way, that you don't even have the right sickness, let alone the appropriate cure.
Monique, I'd like to point out, though, that, however, there is an agreement on one thing, and that is that both sides acknowledge that at some point there's going to have to be a tax increase. It's just about how they're going to get there.
And that's notable because they haven't talked about what that could be. And you'll hear Republicans say it and admit it, but that throws off, in a sense, the negotiations somewhat because, okay, if everybody knows it, then how does that leverage play?
Monique, you mentioned you were following the governor some this week. Can you give us kind of some impressions of what he was out doing?
Well, he's been doing this kind of tour around the state now for the past couple weeks where he pitches it as these community meetings where he's giving folks an update on the budget. What it amounts to is kind of what we've seen him do behind closed doors with his Republican lawmakers, and that is the, hey, stay with me, we're on course, rallying the troops kind of cause. You know, he's out there saying, it's not my fault. I didn't create this mess. I'm doing my best to fix it. I understand there's pain. People are starting to really feel these things in their communities when places are closing their doors. Health centers are only opened one day a week in some communities instead of 5 days a week. So he's out there trying to say, look, I'm really, really trying hard here. It's those big, baddie Democrats, and they're just not working with me. But please, please just keep supporting me.
Monique, you were in Bloomington as you were there. That is Bloomington Normal Area, home to a public university of Illinois State University. You reported this week on kind of the state of the universities around Illinois, because higher education is really one of those key areas that has so far not received any money this year from the state or in the way of state funding. Can you give us an overview of what your story outlined and how the universities are faring or not faring at this point in the year without the additional money?
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, universities are a key area that have not received any operating dollars because of the budget impasse. While money's flowed for a lot of other issues because of court orders and whatnot, the universities still are waiting on their big payments. You know, normally they're used to getting money late, so they're used to operating, you know, kind of with some question marks for a couple months. But everyone had hoped that there would be some kind of idea of a resolution at this point. So universities are looking towards next semester, and there are questions on what kind of operations they can do. And it varies greatly. It varies greatly depending on the university. Larger schools like the U of I, ISU, ones that are much more financially healthy, they can tap into some funds that they have on hand. They can reduce certain services where it doesn't impact the classroom as much, like not upgrading IT equipment, or the U of I is not opening a satellite office in San Francisco. But other smaller schools where enrollment's been declining, they don't have as much money. We're talking like EIU, specifically NIU, even SIU. They've had to do furloughs. They've had to not fill positions. There have been some layoffs. There have been some athletic cuts. And lawmakers had held a series of of committee hearings trying to really get an understanding of what this means and what it'll look like. And at one point, the president of EIU, David Glassman, had warned that, you know, operations are going to be questionable in the spring. They've since been very clear to say that they're going to try to keep the university open. It's going to stay open. It's not going to close. But they're walking a fine line where they're trying to raise awareness about how difficult it is to keep schools open, while at the same time trying not to scare parents and students. If you say, hey, we don't know if we're going to be open in the spring, people aren't going to want to enroll and come next fall. And it becomes this kind of snowball effect for these schools that could have really, really long impacts for them. And these schools in much of these regions are the economic engine. So if schools start to decline, communities start to decline, and there's a real fear about what this will look like long term.
And it has created, I would say, a panic in some of those smaller communities with regional universities.
It absolutely has. That panic is real. People are reaching out. I mean, you see some of these posts go viral online about what these things are going to look like. And there's no clear answer yet. There have been, you know, lots of talks about kind of some kind of patchwork funding. The governor is against almost all of these sorts of efforts to just direct some money. He says it creates a bigger budget deficit. There's talk about maybe letting the universities give them permission to borrow more money. That, of course, will make the problem worse in the long run. They're going to owe money. And because of the budget impasse, six of the state universities had their bond ratings downgraded. So they're going to pay even more to borrow.
Monique, I'm glad you mentioned this idea of university presidents having to walk a fine line because of the recruitment concerns. I think it's also interesting to think that they have to walk a very fine line in terms of how critical they are of the legislature and governor in this too, right? Because they respond to trustees who are appointed by the governor. You don't really hear university presidents out there saying how terrible the turnaround agenda is or how great it is, because, I mean, they don't want to take that sort of political stand. And yet, by them working so hard to keep the universities open, it's yet another way in which the governor and his administration and the Republicans in general have succeeded in making it seem like there's not really a full government shutdown in Illinois, right? You have these state police are still working. You had the state fair still went forward, even though the Buttercow sculptor and many other people did not get paid for their work there. But, you know, on the other hand, the universities, you know, because parents aren't having their kids come home saying, well, they shut down the school, it doesn't really, the crisis is not necessarily hitting home across the state nearly as broadly as it could. And I kind of wonder if maybe by the university presidents not, you know, spotting a little more gloom and doom in that regard, it sort of helps to perpetuate the impasse.
The idea
in some
that
ways.
Things are okay right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what we've seen from them has been very limited in their response. We saw a letter that was written by all the presidents, you know, begging for help, saying we need something done. They had closed door meetings with legislative leaders and the governor when lawmakers were in town a few weeks ago. And afterwards, none of them really wanted to chat about what they were talking about.
No, it was pretty incredible. I was outside the governor's office waiting for the university presidents. And I did have actually pretty good lengthy discussions with the presidents of Western and Southern Illinois universities. But the University of Illinois president was very wary of speaking and, you know, basically said one second and no, I'm not comfortable. And the head of EIU scooted out of there right away and absolutely as soon as possible and really was clearly not up for talking about it. But again, I think that shows kind of the disparity in how some of the universities are able to deal with it. And, you know, there is a school of thought that perhaps part of what is seen as casualties of the budget impasse is, in a sense, what the governor had been hoping to achieve regardless. Governor Bruce Rauner has touted himself as the education governor. And, you know, I asked him recently, you know, hey, so you were supposed to be big on education. Where are all of these education reforms and plans and changes, the basically voucher-like system that you had kind of talked about coming on the way? And he said, oh, that'll be coming. And he's made statements like, I don't want to see community colleges cut. And yet he did propose 30% cut to higher education in his proposal. And he had made some remarks about his desire for universities to spend less on administration and potentially to roll back what degrees they offer, how many programs there are, in short, a sort of consolidation and reconfiguration of Illinois' university system, as you've seen in cases, enrollment fall and such. So this could, in a sense, be a roundabout way of Rauner getting change that he believes is needed. He kind of believed that there was a status quo that needed to be shaken up when it comes to the entire higher education system in Illinois.
And we've seen him go about these kind of alternate routes to get what he wants frequently. We see that with childcare, which is a vote that will possibly come up next week, where he puts in rules changes eligibility and income requirements as a way to cut programs because he knows he can't go through the front door. Lawmakers aren't going to go for it. So he goes through the back.
Well, to me, though, if you're serious about trying to manage the expenses of the state over the long haul, reducing eligibility for subsidized childcare is about the most boneheaded thing you can do. If you recall the history of this program, it was basically an initiative that grew out of welfare reform, bipartisan national effort, probably the mid-90s. Republicans signed on. They thought it was a good idea. We'll take people off welfare, put them to work. But since most of the people on welfare are young women with children, what do we do with their kids? I mean, not everybody lives on the North Shore and can hire a nanny or an au pair to live in with the kids. Some people actually have to find somewhere to leave their children when they go to work. So the state, under Republican administrations and Democratic administrations, provided subsidized daycare at a level that would allow people to go out and work a minimum wage job and have help paying for somewhere for their kids to be while mom's at work. Now, the Rauner administration has changed the rules so that close to 100,000 children are not getting the daycare. What are their moms going to do? Not everybody lives, as I've said before, in kind of a 50s sitcom family situation where grandma and grandpa can watch the kids. And in the long run, women will wind up back on the welfare rolls. After that welfare reform in the mid-90s, the state's TANF population dropped dramatically, people who are eligible for income maintenance, because women were out working. I think that's going to be reversed, and in the long run, it's going to cost you more money.
Well, and it is, though, as you said, Charlie, it's a selective way to manage the budget. I mean, and it's clearly a choice he's making, because Sammy Hagar got paid after the Illinois State Fair, and the rock band Styx got paid after the Illinois State Fair. This seems to me to be another example of a social service agency, and it's a program that, although, as you pointed out, Charlie, has had bipartisan support years ago, it seems to have more Democratic support this year, at least in Illinois, based on the statements we've heard from legislators and the voting patterns we've seen when the legislature tried to sort of undo some of the governor's cuts. It's become perceived as a Democratic program now. And I think that, you know, the governor views it as perhaps a way to continue his, as he said, crisis. And again, I say that I think. All I know is that the governor has said he wants to use social services as a, you know, sort of to drive a wedge issue in the Democratic Party. And here he is cutting a very big social service program.
Well,
you know,
it occurs to me at some point, financial considerations, ethical considerations, moral considerations, empathy has to interject. You may want a wedge issue, but at what cost?
You know, I just wanted to point out, because we kind of noted it, but this child care really issue has been a lightning rod for going on a year now. It was part of the last budget that was an issue. And so we could see it, as Monique noted, when the General Assembly is back on Tuesday. The previous attempt to reverse Rauner's proposed changes that are in effect, but the previous attempt to do it failed. That was when you had Democratic Representative Ken Duncan was in New York for a conference instead of at the one-day session. And because all of the Republicans stuck together, all Democrats would have been needed in order for it to pass. And Duncan wasn't there to do it. So we'll be watching on Tuesday how many Democrats show up. Will any Republicans drop off? This is going to be a key thing to watch. And something else that I'm watching is in the something else that could be voted on Tuesday, and that is if the governor, as I believe he needs to by deadline, acts on another measure. The Governor Bruce Rauner had proposed cutting off basically a lot of people from home care services or help getting maybe adult daycare. This is for the elderly and disabled in cases going to nursing homes, and basically changing the score of who qualifies, making it so that some 34,000 people is the estimated figure would lose state support. And this is another one where advocates of that program say it's going to cost more in the long run because you'll send people to nursing homes, or they're going to maybe go homeless, get more to the ER because they depend on that state supported help. And the Rounder administration says, no, Illinois is giving it to too many people. We're too easy to give away this benefit. The General Assembly passed a law that would require basically the governor to keep things as are, keep the score eligibility for it's called the Don score as is. And what makes this really interesting is that on child care, as we've talked about, all Republicans stuck together. This time you had six Republicans in the Illinois House actually vote to go against the governor. So we'll be watching to see, is that a sign that the governor is going to maybe mandatorily veto it? It doesn't seem so. His office seems to indicate that it has drawn a line in the sand and it stands by the cuts that it wants to make. So if the General Assembly calls that, will those people who, the Republicans that voted for it initially, again, do the same, or will they go back and be on Rauner's side in order to make sure that this doesn't become law? It's going to be really, that's something that we'll be watching Tuesday.
And this week, you could see that the governor kind of tried to take a proactive step in preventing more Republicans from jumping ship by issuing this letter to lawmakers from his budget chief and his human services chief. They wrote to lawmakers and said, no person who believes in nobody who's fiscally responsible can vote for this bill. And it was viewed as a direct message to Republicans that you need to stay on board and not vote to overturn my changes.
We'll try to get in just some quick notes from the field. If time permits, we'll start with Charlie Wheeler.
Adding to the fiscal difficulties, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability came out with its monthly report through the first 5 months of the current fiscal year, FY16. We don't have a budget, but on the other hand, we've brought in roughly $1.5 billion less dollars than we did in the first part of the prior fiscal year. And among the unpaid bills, something like $2 billion in insurance claims under the State Employee Group Insurance Program are piling up and ultimately will have to be paid. And in the case of some of them, we'll have to pay interest because we're paying off the claim so late.
And most likely, Brian Mackey, you'll get the last word.
Well, this is a story I've been covering literally my entire career as a State House reporter, 10 years now. The Illinois Supreme Court has once again spared Philip Morris from having to pay a $10.1 billion with a B judgment. The decision this week came after the court, like I said, ruled a decade ago in favor of Philip Morris. The lawyers have fought hard to keep the case alive, and the court once again sided with Philip Morris in throwing out that award.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. I want to thank Monique Garcia, the Chicago Tribune, for joining us and contributing to today's show. You can get a podcast of the show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided truly double duty, provided by Brian Mackey. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.